Hi, this is Jen Zaman, and you are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
And good morning. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It is Monday morning. I'm Beth Pike, and today in the studio, we are going to be talking with members of Mothers in Charge and Mama on a Mission and Corey's Network Incorporated. They all work with families and friends who have lost loved ones to violence. And today our host, Craig LeBeau, is going to be talking with Rosalind Temple, also Monique Willis, and Shelley Metgee about the resources and support that they provide during the most difficult times. We'll also be opening up our phone lines for your questions and stories, so keep that in mind. And then stay tuned for our calendar of events that we always have in the middle of the show, and we'll have our 420 drug war news at the end of the show. Coming up here in just a moment, though, will be Craig and his guest.
From the west out.
Okay, this is Craig LeBeau, and thank you for joining us. We do have three guests in here, and we do have a fourth person that joined us but won't be talking. So the first one we have is Monique Willis. She is the founder of Mama on a Mission.
Good morning.
And we have Rosalind Temple. She is the founder of Mothers in Charge.
Good morning.
And we have Shelley Mutgee, who is the founder of Corey's Network.
Good morning.
Okay, thank you, and good morning. Thank you for being here. We're going to start out with just a few minutes talking about what each of your organizations do, and then we are going to open up the lines for phone calls for questions. Let me start, Monique, if you can tell us what Mama on a Mission does.
Currently, we have two programs. One is called Lost Love, to where we help families in the beginning when you first are notified about the death of your loved one. We will help you financially with the funeral homes and other resources of services. We will also help you get your obituary formatted and printed and any other services you may need during that process. And if the homicide is currently unsolved, you're part of the Crime and Violence Coalition, to where we will keep the name of your loved one's name in the streets. We will put up billboards, flyers, just keep the name circulating so we can remember your loved one.
All right, and let me go. I'll come back to you in a minute. Shelley, tell us about Corey's Network.
Corey's Network is an advocacy program for the immediate needs of homicide survivors. In other words, the people that survived the person being taken from them. What we do is we help understand the investigation. We help them navigate the media. We help them find counseling, and then on top of that, we also help pay for funerals. And that's what most of our fundraising is for, is to help pay for funerals. It's basically on a social work format, because I've been in social work for 28 years. And what that means is that we help work the social system to meet the need of the client. So that's the reason we are a network and not necessarily just a program.
All right. And Rosalind, if you could tell us what Mothers in Charge does.
Mothers in Charge is a national organization. My founder is founded by Dorothy Johnson Spike out of Philadelphia. I brought the Kansas City chapter here to Kansas City. We're Kansas City Mothers in Charge. We're mothers that have been victimized by homicide here in our Kansas City area. Mothers in Charge, we're called out to every homicide scene. When there's homicide occurring in our community, I go out to the scene, support the families, the community, and bridge the gap, and support the police department, bridge the gap that has not been bridged, closed yet. Mothers in Charge, we also serve, we also do a healing support, and we choose to heal. That doesn't not mean that you get over your loved one, but you choose to heal through it. You have to live through it. So we do a healing support service every third Thursday of the month from 5 to 7 at our office location at 3200 Wayne. And we also do visuals at request. We also do canvassing. We're a canvassing mother. When a homicide occurs in our community, we go out of the community, we knock on doors with the homicide detectives there. Because if someone is going to talk, they're going to talk right then and there. And that's the best to have the detectives right there. Mothers in Charge, we also went to prison. We do a lot of different services.
And when you say you take detectives with you, so that's in the case where it's at the beginning before the homicide is solved.
Right. We are called as soon as when the murder squad of the sergeant murder squad get the call that it's been a homicide in the community. I am also called on their call list, so I'm one of the ones that called when we go out there when a homicide first occurs. Yes.
Okay. Let me give out the phone number so people can call with questions, and then we'll come back and ask you a few more questions. If you have any questions or comments, number to call is 816-931-5534. Again, that's 816-931-5534. All right, let me go back to, if we can just get into a little bit of why each of you founded it, and I know each of you suffered a loss, so if you can tell us a little bit about that. So we'll start with Monique.
My son, Alonzo Thomas IV, he was murdered April the 5th, 2014. I started my organization because some of the services that I wanted or needed were not provided or offered to me by any other organization. So I felt there were some different holes within the services that I could probably, you know, fill within bridging the gaps.
All right. And Shelley?
My son, Corey Lakovich, was murdered July 28th of 2013. I live out in Independence, and out in Independence and the other suburbs, there are no victims advocates that are serving that particular area. So we created CORE's Network as an advocacy program to meet some of the needs that were not met for our particular family.
Okay. And in your case, is your son's murder solved yet?
Or? In all three of our cases, none of our children have had their murder solved.
All right. And Rosalind?
2011, November 23rd, what was Thanksgiving Eve, my son Antonio Thompson, who was 26 years old, was found murdered in his apartment. That was Thanksgiving Eve, leap year, and which is leap year again. So Thanksgiving Eve will follow the 23rd once again. Well, at the time of my son's homicide, I went there. I knew something was wrong with my child. I knew because we were cooking Thanksgiving dinner together. He just had moved his first apartment. Had half his food at my house, half of it was at home. During my time, getting off of work, worked the 12-hour shifts, got off of work, didn't get no response to a phone call. I called my son all the day. And when they did find my son, 10:30 at night, 2011, November 23rd, no one was there but the police department, family, and media. So I knew at that time it needed to be a bridge gap. I needed someone personal, like me as a mother, to be able to go back out to them scenes to support families and help them and know what is details of the homicide investigation.
Right. And now you mentioned the healing aspects. And so one question I have of all three of you, because you said you're sends all of them were unsolved. Does that affect, or I'm sure it affects it, how does that impact the healing process with the fact that it's not solved yet?
Well, I choose to heal, and that's what the beginning of our healing process at KC Mothers in Charge, we call it healing support, because I know if you speak healing to yourself, if you speak anything to yourself, you will soon believe it and start living it. And because you choose to heal, that don't mean that you forget about your child, that you get over, but you have to live through it. You have to have a fight in you, and that's what it is. I had a fight in me, and so I had to be able to say I want to heal, to be able to fight and help my community. So the healing process started, and that and healing process it's no five stages of grief. It's just the point about I do heal. I might be at day one today of the whole homicide, of the whole scene that happened to my son, but what do I do with that? And that's how the healing process began, because I want to cry and break down, and have that moment. That means that I'm still healing with tears rolling down my face. It's okay to cry.
For us at CORE's Network, the healing process for me has been being able to help other people meet needs that were not met during my son's homicide. So in other words, being able to be there for them when no one was there for us, that helps us. And the other part of it is that I would rather do something to help people than to sit at home and know I could have done something and I didn't. So this has been a choice for us, that we knew that we had the right support system and we had the right people for our board of directors, and it was the right time, so we created CORE's Network.
My healing support is ditto to both of them. I mean, just stepping back and helping other family members in my same circumstance and situation is reevaluating my life and my situation and how I want to bring out things within the life and within my life and what's going on. So it's really, you know, looking deep within yourself and helping others and moving forward and wanting to move forward.
All right. Yeah, all three of you mentioned, I guess, the start in 2011 with Roslyn and extended to 2014. So prior to that, before the three of you started your organizations based on your experiences, were there other organizations in Kansas City? And are there others that still do some similar things to what your three do?
Yes. For me, Mothers in Charge was one of the first organizations that came to knocking on my door. I was not at the scene of the crime because I was out of town. I met Corey's network probably last year sometime through just some other networking within the community.
All right.
And out in Independence, like I said, what we found is that Kansas City, Missouri, and Kansas City, Kansas have advocates on their payroll in the police departments. The suburbs do not have those advocates. It may be because there's not as much murder. It could be many different things. Mostly, I think it's because of the recession. They were told to relieve anyone that was not a necessary person in their payroll. And unfortunately, that meant that the advocates left. So for us, there was no one that knocked at my door. There was no one that helped us with the candle vigil. There was no one at all that was able to help us. And I came out after I found out my son had died and asked for my victim's advocate. Because like I said, I've been in social work 25 years before that. And I assumed that there would be a victim's advocate. And they said, we're sorry, but there will be no victim's advocate for you until your son's murder is solved. And at that time, you'll get a victim's advocate from the county. And unfortunately, that means that my son's murder has not been solved, so I still don't have an advocate. So in my community, there was none.
Well, for me, it was Ad Hoc Group Against Crime. Alvin Brooks had been around for many, many years, way before I was born, doing what he was doing. And I really appreciate what they did. I was able to go and sit there and just to be there. And I knew it would be some mother, some family walked through the door, and I can sit down and talk to her. We can relate to what has happened to us because I was trying to process. It was a hard process. You know, I know what they said had happened, and I believe what they said, but I need to process this. So to me, it was Ad Hoc Group Against Crime had been our community for a long time, and that was where I began to have my walkthrough.
Wyandotte County also, I know they have a victim's advocate.
That's in Kansas
office.
City, Kansas, right?
Right. But theirs is somewhat limited, too, in that it's primarily to work with victims through the legal process to help them, you know, understand what's happening and prepare them for court and all that kind of stuff.
And we answer calls at Corps Network. We do answer calls to that side of the state line as well. We don't just serve the Missouri side. We serve both sides. In Kansas City, Kansas, some of their victims, we have helped pay for tickets for somebody to come from out of state so that they could attend their son's funeral in Kansas City, Kansas. We've helped fund funerals in Kansas City, Kansas, as well as we're part of the Kansas City Victims Advocacy Network, which is through the police department. So we're in constant contact with the people in that particular group so that they know that they can reach out and get our services.
All right. Tell me a little bit more about that network.
The Kansas City, Kansas, or the Wyandotte County Victims Advocacy Network is made up of individuals that serve that particular area. There are things like the Catholic Charities. There's a homeless group that comes. There's also individuals, I believe, from the Guadalupe Center that will serve on that side. And it just depends on which month you go, which group of people you're going to have. But they provide for other advocates training as well. They've had the man that was over their crime victims compensation that came out and did a training for that particular group. And And there, it's just a nice little group that you can talk to each other, find out what your programs do, and be able to call on each other.
I think, for as I can say, Mothers in Charge, we'll go wherever we're called. It don't matter. We have went, I'm thinking most of all of us at this table, we would service anyone. We would go across state line. We would go Independence, Blue Springs, Grandview. You know, you name it. Raytown, we'll be there. You know, just a part about people reaching out. You know, and at the time of losing a child, I know, like I said, I can speak about a child that you just numb to the field. You don't think about who to reach out to. If it wasn't for a cousin to come and support me and walk me through things I need to walk through, I would have never found Ad Hoc because I didn't know which way to go. It was, like I said, I was trying to process what they said. So I think that we all sit at this table. We all don't have no guideline or area where we won't go. We'll do whatever's necessary because we all have walked in the same shoes. We all have lost a child. We're part of a club that we didn't ask to join.
All right. I do want to give out the phone number again. If you have any comments or any questions of any of our guests today, you may call 816-931-5534. Again, that's 816-931-5534. And we particularly, I think, would like to hear if you are in similar situation and would have a comment or question. If you've lost a loved one to homicide, we would like to hear from you. Okay. Let me move on a little bit to go back to each of you and just tell us, spend 2 or 3 minutes, each of you, just telling us a little bit about your child. Whatever you feel comfortable sharing.
Well, Alonzo Thomas IV, he has 2 children. His son, Alonzo Thomas V, he has never met. The young lady was currently pregnant. She was about 4 months old, about 4 months pregnant at the time that I found out about Alonzo. I found out about herself. So therefore, I have 2 grandchildren, and the 5th, I'm also trying to fight to get to see as well, to have him be a part of our lives. His oldest, his baby, grandbaby, or my grandbaby, he loved her dearly, very protective. I mean, just to know that she's 4 right now, and she was 2 years old when he passed, and she still misses and talks about her daddy.
Yeah. Shelley?
Corey was my oldest son. He was 22 at the time that he was attacked and going to college at the time at the same school where I was teaching. He was trying to get his degree in information technologies, sciences. He worked at the Jimmy John's. He was trying to get his life together. He and his wife were in the middle of a separation. So they were... You know, I don't know what they were going to do after he graduated from college, but I think that's part of the problem is you never know what they were going to do after, what they could have done when. But Corey had struggled his entire life with a learning disability, so for him to go to college and to be able to accomplish this goal was something we weren't sure he was ever going to do. And he had a great sense of humor. He was a good person. He gave unconditionally. And he loved his family completely. And his younger brothers miss him dearly every day. He's got a 25-year-old brother, and he's got a 18-year-old brother that at the time they were 14 and 21. So he's missing out on a lot of things. And his brother is sad that he's older than his brother ever got to be.
Rosalyn?
My son was Antonio Thompson. He was 26 at the time he was murdered, and everyone called him Pee Wee. He went to Westport High School. He grew up here in Kansas City. He had one son. Pee Wee was a trendsetter. He set a trend, said if somebody designed it, if he put out something he wore, everybody started wearing it. Pee Wee he was loved by many. He had... many siblings. He had a sister and brother on my side. His father had many children. Pee Wee's well loved. He was just a couple of weeks ago, October 8th, he would have been 31 years old. I didn't get that chance to see what he would have been at 31 years old. But it's going on 5 years next month, the 23rd, be 5 years. I mean, 5 years that he has became one of Kansas City homicide victims. So that's about Pee Wee. Many know him and many loved him. And I missed him as his mother.
And going back, because you all said all of the homicides were unsolved, I'm curious, do you feel like the police have done everything they can to try to solve it?
I personally think that it's, they may need to do some additional work, and also they need the community to help them with the additional work as well, with the different pieces of the puzzle that need to be put together.
Do either of you have?
For mine, Corey's investigation has stalled at this time. There's an entire building of people that admitted that they heard my son screaming, but they won't admit to actually looking out the door. So until someone comes forward, we're probably not going to be able to get Corey solved.
Rosalyn?
My mic is out.
Okay, you can go ahead.
Well, I think our community has let us down. I really do. I think our community has let us down in a big way. I think the police have done what they can do. They can do so much. But our streets of Kansas City talk. I think people know about our homicide. They, our children, they won't come out and speak. You know, how can we walk in a community and knowing that our children have been murdered, no one has came up? Families know. I'm going to say, we know our children. We hear this. Kansas City's small. You hear people talking. You know when your children's into something. It starts in our home. But I truly believe our community has let us down. That's me. That's how I feel. Have let me down a big way. Because it's 5 years. I think the police have did all they can do at this point.
All right. We have... Okay. We're going to take, I think, a break now. And we will be back in a few minutes.
Now, the calendar for October 24th. Moore Squared is hosting Democracy in Action, a public meeting, 7 p.m., Tuesday, October 25th, at Community Christian Church, 4601 Main Street, KCMO. They will be addressing access to health, criminal justice, immigration, overcoming voter suppression, public education, and more. Find out about ballot issues and how you can vote your convictions. Representative Brandon Ellington, GYRL, 100 Men of Blue Hills, Consolidated Social Work Services, and Love House are hosting a spooky night out for families, trick-or-treat safe place for kids. There will be spooky night activities, scary movies, the haunted field, as well as candy and children's games. You can join them from 6 to 9 p.m. Monday, October 31st at 3836 Chestnut, KCMO. Johnson County Community College and Park University are sponsoring their annual Peace Building Conference titled Redefining Us Versus Them, with events Friday, November 4th at Park College and Saturday, November 5th at Johnson County Community College. They will have workshops on business, health care, journalism, political science, and more. You can learn more about the speakers and events, as well as register at www.jccc.edu/conferences/peacebuilding. Give Yourself Real Love is hosting a 4-week girls camp for girls 12 to 18 years of age. The first two parts will be on consecutive Saturdays, November 5th and November 12th, with a Friday night sleepover on Friday, November 18th into Saturday the 19th, and finishing with a beauty day on Saturday, November 26th. They are also holding a princess camp for girls age 5 to 11. You can find out how to enroll, cost of events, time and locations at gyrlpleas.org or by sending an email to MSE@gyrlpleas.org. The Southern Christian Leadership Conference of Greater Kansas City will be holding a prayer vigil and press conference asking the FBI and U.S. Attorney to investigate the KCMO police killing of Ryan Stope. That's on Wednesday, September 28th at 5 p.m. on the corner of 12th and McGee in downtown KCMO. There are two sides to this story, and they want the truth revealed. For more information on Ryan Stokes, look for SCLC Greater Kansas City on Facebook. My name is Jeff Humfeld, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website. That's kkfi.org. You are listening to 90.1 FM, Kansas City Community Radio.
Okay, we're back. This is Craig Lubow again. And for those of you just joining us, we have Shelley Mutchie from Corey's Network with us, Rosalind Temple from Mothers in Charge, and Monique Willis from Mama on a Mission. The three of them have organizations that work with other relatives and family of homicide victims and help provide services to that. We do have a phone call. Caller, if you would state your first name and where you're calling from. Caller, are you there? Okay. Looks like we lost them. If you want to call back, we'd welcome your call back. Rosalind, you would talk about how you felt like in some ways the community has let you down. And Monique just handed me a flyer that's got numerous photos of homicide victims where the homicides have not been solved. When you go out, because you said you go out and talk with witnesses and stuff some too, and the families, with the detectives, and is one of the problems I'm assuming would be that a lot of witnesses are fearful of becoming involved, and if that's the case, how do you approach them? If you know of somebody that you think is a witness, how do you approach them and encourage them to become involved?
Well, I think, you know, people saying they're in fear. I think they need to change that fear around, because you should be fear that there's people still walking our streets. They're still roaming around our schools, our children, our shopping centers, and they will commit another crime. They will commit another homicide if we don't get them off the streets. And that's what we have to twist that fear around, to get them off the streets, to work with the detectives, and let them do their job. They have a job to do, and they can do so much, but a community, we have a community that has been broken. And every time it's a homicide occurring in our community, each family been broken. There we go again with another family that has been broken. So it just piled up. We get stuff piled up on top of homicides on top of homicides. But we have a community that we have to speak up, because people good to say, it's not none of my business. Well, it's your business when it happened to you. See, ain't no one exempt from homicide. And I'm telling you, we had two homicides over the weekend. And I look at these families, and I mourn with these families each time. My heart just hurt, because I understand the scream of a mother, of a father, of a loved one, sister, siblings, you know. But we have a community that has to step up. We have to stop allowing our children to do what they're doing to hurt one another. We have to love on each other for where we at. Until we, and that's why we have all them homicides. These are homicides from probably from Monique had from when her son Alonzo was murdered. But just go back 50 years. You know, this haven't been, it's just, this is something just hadn't started. This has been going on for a long time. Over 100 homicides. One year we was down, 2014, we was down to, I believe, 86, 87 homicides. But we went right back up. My son's year, 2011, we was at 109 homicides.
All right. We do have a caller on the line. Caller, would you state your first name and where you're calling from?
Yes, this is Jeff, and I'm calling from Midtown. And I do have a question. I have a friend whose son was murdered here a little while back. His girlfriend's ex-boyfriend shot him. And, you know, what does he do if he doesn't have enough money to bury his son? Does he have to borrow money? What, you know, are there any services or anything like that that's out there for someone that can't afford to bury their loved ones?
Well, there are several things that can happen for this young person. Number one, there is a program. It's called Crime Victims Compensation, and it is through the state. It's actually paid for through the individuals that are in prison at this time. They will reimburse a family up to $5,000 for funeral costs. Most of the funeral directors in this area have working relationships with all three of the groups that are here today, and they will help us by making a funeral that will be under the $5,000. Therefore, they would be able to be reimbursed for that amount of money. The next thing is there are, I know that Mama on a Mission and Corey's Network, we both help to fund the funeral. We actually put money into the funeral costs to help that along. And then on top of that, I know that I've done fundraising for particular families. I know that Mama on a Mission's done it for particular families. But we'll go out into the community, and restaurants will do what's called a community night, and all of the money for the evening, a certain percentage of that will go to the family so that they can help bury their child or bury their loved one. So there are different ideas that you can go through. If you contact either of us, we can help you go and look into each of these areas. One of the biggest things, though, that I would suggest is that he get with the victim's advocate if he's in Kansas City, Missouri, and get the paperwork for the crime victim's compensation, and that would probably be his first start or his first step.
Thank you very much.
Monique, you indicate that you started a social media campaign to try to bring justice to your son.
Correct.
Tell us about the social media, what you're doing.
The Kansas City Unsolved Homicides, the flyer. I will post that monthly, typically on the 5th of the month, because my son's homicide occurred the 5th of the month at 1 o'clock. So that's circulated monthly. Also, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, there's whatever social media account I have, it will be posted and try to be circulated. So there's also within, like I said, billboards and being out in the community, passing out flyers.
Okay. And the flyer you have here, is that a complete list of the unsolved homicides, or?
Not at all. Okay. Just the families that I'm working with that allowed me to, or wanted their families' faces to be posted.
All right. And do you know, do you have any numbers as far as the total, how many there are in this?
How many unsolved?
Yeah.
That was something Rostin probably could answer.
Well, I don't have the number of unsolved. I'm just trying to get into that, but I have the number of homicides today. We're at 95 homicides.
Okay, and that's today for this
year. Metropolitan area of Kansas City, not the surrounding counties, but right here in Kansas City.
Okay.
Unsolved, that will be some paperwork I have to go back in years and.
All right. And so what else? Are there other things you're doing? Because I think you mentioned also reward fund. Is there anything specific each of you are doing, working on your son's cases?
My reward fund, not mine actually, whomever comes forward and helps to solve Corey's murder, right now that is at $9,000. What we do is basically we collect any kind of donations throughout the year, and then whenever we reach a certain amount, we're able to put that money down on his reward. In my mind, $9,000 pays a lot of rent and a lot of diapers and a lot of food and a lot of clothes and a lot of baby stuff and et cetera. And eventually, in my thought process, someone is going to get tired of the person living in their house that killed my son. And they're going to need some money, and they're going to realize that that $9,000 was worth the other person. And because, like Rosalind said before, this person is going to kill again. What has happened is we've gone from a society that taught don't kill because it's wrong, and we started teaching our kids don't kill because you might get busted. And as long as these unsolved murders are out there, that's exactly the idea that we are getting across to our kids and to the individuals in our city. Because if we can't solve these murders, what are the chances? It's like playing the lottery. I can kill this person. I can get away with it. I know somebody else who got away with it. So as far as ours, we're continuing to raise that amount in hopes that eventually someone who is living in the same house with the person who killed our son will say, you know what, that $9,000 pays for a whole lot of rent, a whole lot of car. So that's what we're looking for with that.
And some of Kansas City is not aware of that $1,000 is automatically ad hoc provides, and $2,000 Crime Stoppers will provide. So most likely a family has $3,000 for reward automatically. Then additional funds are raised by the family members.
And that's in addition to the rewards listed on your flyer?
Or? The rewards on the flyers is additionally, yes, $3,000 is the normal amount because it's $2,000 for Crime Stoppers and $1,000 ad hoc.
All right. And we do have a caller on the line. Caller, would you state your first name and where you're calling from?
Oh, this is Kurt from the East Side. And I want to respect the work that these wonderful women do for homicides after the fact. But I wonder if they have any observations that they have to prevent these homicides, if there's cultural issues that they would like to draw attention to. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call.
One thing I'd like to put out there again is that as a culture, we have quit teaching our kids that it's wrong and started teaching them that you might get busted. And I think that that's a huge thing. And I'm not saying that we need to have church inside of our schools or anything else, but what I am saying is that we don't have that same moral code because we've got so much pressure of keeping that kind of thought process out of our schools and out of our cities and out of our states. So it creates part of that, and I know that Rosalind's got more that she wants to add on to it.
Well, I just truly believe it starts in our homes. I have to go right back to it starts in our homes. You know, homicide, I believe, is a learned behavior. I truly believe it's a learned behavior. But I think that it starts in our home. Because your child gets a certain age, they don't live in your home, that don't mean that you, as a parent, that you cannot tell your child the right thing to do. Because the lawmakers want to put guns on the streets, that don't mean our children should go purchase a gun. We got to stop doing what everybody say that we should do, or what the society said this is what we putting out for you to do. Because we have to think about a life. These are human lives. These are people that breathe life, that was born in this world, had a purpose in this world. So you had no right to take their life. So it goes back to homes, families, mothers, fathers, because we shorten and fathers in a home. That don't mean that a mother or a grandmother or a grandfather or uncle or aunt can't step up and do the right thing. Because I'm telling you, Kansas City's small, and it's the same names you hear on the streets that's committing these violent acts to our children, to our loved ones, when you're killing babies. See, it's not no street code. We go back to respect. We lost respect. And I'm telling you something, one thing I'm going to say, it is black on black homicides. We have to stop. We have to say, black lives matter. Yes, we three ladies sitting here, and we know they matter. Because our children was, me and Monique, our children was black. Yes, they do matter. But even Shelly know they matter. So we got to start saying, we believe that, but our community don't. You know, you're good to start pointing fingers when it's about a police officer or when it's about someone coming out of the community. What about us living in our community, killing each other every day? shooting up houses. I mean, walking up on houses, shooting babies. That's where we had a problem. A long time ago, it used to be a respect hold where you didn't. It was a pass. Men got a pass when they was with their women and babies. They got a pass. They didn't shoot up the car or shoot up their homes, but maybe they waited afterwards when they wasn't around there. But somewhere we have to take back and say enough is enough. As home, homicide is preventable. It is preventable. No one can tell me no different. It's just your thinking. That's making a bad choice. Now, a person that getting killed, they're making a bad choice. No, they didn't. They just didn't have a chance. But we all have to look at each other as human beings, as people that someone loves. Whether you like them or not, you don't have nobody to take their life.
Yeah. And, you know, I want to piggyback off of something she said. She said that we're having our babies killed. Monique and I, this year so far, have already helped four families bury their children. And these are not like 12, 13-year-old children that are out in the street that could have even said something. These are 3 and 4 years old. We have a quarterly fundraiser out at Chuck E. Cheese in Independence, and all the funds go for someone under the age of 12. And I had a woman that came out and spoke to me and to my husband, and we were talking about what Corey's Network does and et cetera. And when we were done, she said, God bless you. I've never known anyone that got murdered, but I'll keep you in my prayers. And 3 weeks later, she called me. And she said, do you remember me? My name's Ty. And I said, yes. She said, that was my little brother that was murdered on Father's Day. I need your help. So, you know, it's not, like Rosalind said, it's not on the person who's offended you. You're shooting up houses. You're shooting at cars. Four-year-old babies are getting murdered. And it's ridiculous. There's absolutely no logic to what they're doing, except for terrorism.
Okay. Now, you mentioned before the when you would talk about reward money and the people who live with the perpetrators, the hope is that they're going to call and turn them in. Do you feel like that the families of those perpetrators, do you think most of them do in fact know that their loved one was responsible for somebody's murder? Or do you think in some situations that the family and their friends of the perpetrator really have no clue that this other person did something?
I remember the day that Corey was attacked, and I remember looking down on my calf, and there was a drop of his blood on my calf. I know that that means that there was blood on the person who killed my son. He was a victim of a stabbing, not guns. Mm-hmm. But what that means to me is that he went home, or she did, and changed her clothes or his clothes and put them in the hamper or put them in the trash or something. That person is going to know that why is there blood on my son's clothes? Why is there blood in my hamper? There's no reason that this person did not get seen. They would have had to have hidden in the woods under a brick. And I think that that's the case in many of these situations, that family members see them come home, they see the gun, they smell the gunpowder, they smell, you know, the metallic smell of blood or whatever else it may be, and they're not saying anything. And it's because they're afraid to be a snitch. And there's a big difference between being a witness and being a snitch. A witness is somebody who has seen something that was wrong and has spoken up to get this person off the street. A snitch is somebody who's trying to get out of whatever they got into trouble for in the first place. And so this snitches get stitches stuff has to stop.
All right. And I believe, do we have a caller on the line? Okay. Caller, would you state your first name and where are you calling from?
George, from north of the river. First of all, you're to be, the ladies there are to be commended, and I am just honored to be talking with them with the loss that they have incurred. My only comment is I think it's larger. I think it's a worldwide attitude about human life. You look at all the wars. You look at how we treat other countries and people in those countries. And so it's. I think it goes worldwide. But that's just my take on it. And I appreciate KKFI and programs like this that help folks like me understand what's going on in our cities. So thank you very much, and have a great day, folks.
All right. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
I'd like to respond to George. You're absolutely right. It's a global issue. The problem is we are three women, and we can't talk as much about what's happening in California or in Iraq or with ISIS and et cetera. We can only control what we can control. And, you know, it's kind of like that old saying, or not saying, but that story about the Indian that, not it says Indian, but it's Native American standing on the side of the ocean, throwing starfish back into the ocean one at a time. And someone said, you know, you're not going to be able to save all the starfish out here. He said, no, but at least I saved that one. And what we're hoping for, the three of us, is that maybe our voices will stop one of these murders. Maybe we can help somebody get counseling so that they don't get into a gang, so that they don't commit a murder after something else has happened, or once somebody's been killed, that they don't go and get retaliation. You know, we can only focus on right here. And George, you're absolutely right. It's a global situation, but we can't take on the whole world. You know, we can take on Kansas City. We can try our best at that.
Right.
Well, Mothers in Charge is a national organization. We have 13 chapters around different cities. It started out of Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, by Dorothy Johnson Spike 14 years ago. And they have been fighting the fight. It's San Francisco, L.A., Harrisburg, Knoxville, Boston, Buffalo, Washington, we go on. It is a health epidemic. That's what my national is fighting. She was down in Washington with some legislation yesterday. They've been fighting this fight. They had a million woman march last week, and they all met up. It was many women, many people around these different cities have lost children. Like I said, Kansas City, we had 95 homicides. And you go back and you look at probably Philadelphia, I know probably over 300 homicides, but Chicago, my God, over probably 600 homicides. Homicide is a health, public health epidemic. It is really a problem. And one thing I want to say, we would love to be put out of business around this table, I'm quite sure. But families, you have to get life insurance. We're born in this world, we've got to die in this world, but not in the way that our children have died. So I think that's one topic that can help us a lot. If families reach out, reach in your pocket. Sometimes we go do fast food, do little things that we say we could have did something different with. Because I know for me in 2011, I did not have insurance policy for my son. But after that, I said I would never live life like that again. So I have a policy on all my children and grandchildren. Because you cannot grieve when you're trying to bury your child. You're trying to worry about how you're going to bury your child. So families, community, we have to do better in that aspect to help these ladies that's helping with funeral arrangements. They can do so much. And if we're not supporting their fundraising and the things they're doing, they're trying to help bury your loved ones, but we can prevent homicides. I'm telling you, we have to say enough is enough. We know and we hear about our children committing violent crimes. And we have to stop being beneficials off our children's mess, off their criminal activities. We have to stand up and take it back for my children. Because I know my children tell me, Mom, I'm grown. I say, yeah, you grown, but still, I'm still your mother. And for the love of a mother and father, a child wouldn't do to hear you say, I don't want you doing that. We have to stop turning our heads, turning our shoulders the other way, because it's not our children. Because if we keep on allowing, you will be the next homicide victim. I will be called out to that scene to stand with that mother and father. That will be your child. So as of now today, you have to say, we have to say as homes, no. If you know your child got a gun, talk to that child. Say, why do you have this gun? Is the need for you to have a weapon? And I hear it all the time. Oh, well, I got to protect myself. Protect yourself from where? What are you doing? So we have to address things like that. We have to really get into educating ourselves. And I know Mothers in Charge, we're an education prevention to reduce homicide. I wish we would say stop, but reduce.
All right, so we just have 1 minute left, so if we could very quickly, if each of you could tell what your, if you have a website and a phone number people can call to get information.
You can contact Mom on a Mission at 816-499-1214. My website is mommaonamissioninc.com.
All right, Shelley.
Our number is 816-834-9161. That's a 24-hour hotline, so it will be answered at all times. Our website is coreysnetwork.org, coreysnetwork.org.
All right, and Rosalyn?
It's KC Mothers in Charge, 816-912-2601. Our office is 3200 Wayne, Robert J. Mohawk, Linwood Multipurpose Center. Our website is www.mothersincharge.org, mothers with an S.
All right.
No apostrophe.
Okay. Thank you for joining us. And next up is the 420 Drug News.
It's the 420 Drug War News. If you're a news junkie like me, you probably saw all the stories breaking in the major newspapers around the country about the 23 seconds it takes between arrests for drug users here in the United States. I got a chance to speak with the author of that 23-second report.
My name is Tess Borden. I'm the R.A. Nyer Fellow at the ACLU and Human Rights Watch. And I'm the author of a new report that both organizations put out today calling for the decriminalization of personal use and possession of all illicit drugs. The report is the result of a year-long study that we undertook into how the law enforcement approach to personal drug use has failed. And we found 196 pages of things, but I just want to highlight a few of them. We found first that the scale of enforcement is absolutely massive. Around the country, police make more arrests for simple drug possession, that is possession of drugs for personal use, than for any other crime, making drug possession the single most arrested crime in the country. We also found that that amounts to more than three times as many arrests as for all violent crimes combined, and more than five times as many arrests, again, for possession than for drug dealing. So the scale is just enormous. Secondly, we found that the consequences of these arrests and prosecutions for personal drug use are devastating, sometimes lifelong. As a result of this, on any given day, we have about 140,000 people behind bars for drug possession and tens of thousands more cycling through jails and prisons or struggling to make ends meet on probation and parole. And a conviction for drug possession can mean individuals and even whole families are excluded from public benefits such as food stamps or public housing. It can make it hard to rent a home. It can make it hard to get a job or to bring in wages. And obviously, next month in many states, it can keep people from the voting booth. In addition, for non-citizens, a conviction for drug possession can mean possible deportation. And then just lastly, I have to highlight that we've also found that drug possession enforcement disproportionately impacts communities of color and the poor without justification. So we know, for example, that black and white people around the country use drugs at equivalent rates, and yet around the country, a black person is 2.5 times more likely to be arrested for drug possession than a white person, and in many states, that ratio is significantly higher. In no state is it 1-to-1.
We'll feature more of that interview with Tess Borden on tomorrow's 420, but I want to just talk to you, dear listener, about the fact the drug war is failing, obviously. We all know it, and yet you remain silent. You don't speak up at church. Maybe you can't speak up at work, but you can talk to your neighbors and your family. You can talk to your elected officials and bring this madness to an end. Dean Becker, DrugTruth.net.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the host and the guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, or its staff and volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show episodes and podcasts on the Jaws of Justice Radio page on Facebook. If you have a show idea or you want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. And you can always listen to us live on the KKFI website at kkfi.org. This is your engineer for Jaws of Justice Radio, Beth Pike. And be sure to tune in Thursday mornings at 6 a.m. when I host the Thirsty Thursday edition of your Morning Buzz. Our outro music is Better Man, and that's from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Khadija and the White Guy at 9 a.m. on Thursdays, and then Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 on Fridays. Up next is Beautician's Blues. That's with Luscious Lynn. And then at noon, it's Arts Magazine with Michael Hogue. You'll want to stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon, and then Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo en Familia, and Compartiendo en Noche.